As we read our Bibles, there are often many different stories that stir up great emotions from within us, right? I mean, there are plenty of stories that make us quite happy. There are plenty of stories that bring us joy. There are stories that make us sad or that just make us reflect about things, that make us have to look within. But every now and then, there are stories that kind of cause discomfort. They're a little uncomfortable. And I think the story we're looking at today might be one of the stories that is at the top of that list. It causes quite a bit of discomfort. And when we read it, I think it's natural to start asking questions. Well, why does Jesus respond in this way? Why doesn't he just help this woman right away? What is he doing here? And yet, I think that despite our discomfort, there is actually a great irony in that feeling. And so I want to look at the story today and to see what our discomfort may reveal about how we view ourselves, how we view God, and how we view our place before him. And as we dive into this text, we're going to see how a simple story about a table, some sheep, and a dog can actually show us what great faith really looks like. And so if you haven't already, go ahead and open up to Matthew chapter 15. And I'm going to read again just verses 21 to 23. Matthew 15, verses 21 to 23. And Jesus went away from there and withdrew to the district of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a Canaanite woman from that region came out and was crying, "Have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David. My daughter is severely oppressed by a demon." But he did not answer her a word. And his disciples came and begged him, saying, "Send her away, for she is crying out after us." Now Jesus here, he is approached by a woman who claims that her daughter is in need of healing. Her daughter needs help. But right off the bat, I want us to notice something about the woman. I want us to see just how persistent her actions show that she was. And we might typically skip over verse 21 here. Verse 21, where it says that Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre and Sidon. But I actually think it's quite important, because this area is pretty far off of where he normally was at. It was far to the northwest. Jesus typically walked around the area between Samaria and Galilee. This is not in that area. He walked far off. The account of Mark. Mark also tells us the story. His account in Mark 7 actually tells us that he went into a house and he did not want anybody to know that he was there. He was seeking privacy. He was drawing away from people. He didn't want anybody to know that he was there. And yet, despite drawing away from people, trying to find privacy, this woman finds him. Think about how much determination already we're seeing this woman show. She really wants to get to Jesus. And so she finds him, she gets to him, and she starts crying after him. Jesus isn't in the synagogue teaching to massive groups of people. He isn't before everybody offering all these things, trying to heal many people. He's trying to get away from it, from everybody. And yet she finds him. She was willing to go wherever she needed to go to get to Jesus, because she knew Jesus was her only hope. But more than that, I actually want us to see what the disciples' response to the woman tells us about her. What the disciples say. Verse 23 tells us that the disciples were begging her, saying, quote, "Send her away, for she is crying out after us." And I want to make sure we get the full picture here. I want us to see just exactly what's going on. See, this woman had not only tracked Jesus down in this place where he had sought privacy, but seemingly after not getting the answer that she wanted from Jesus, well, she's turned to the disciples and started begging them, saying, "Please, won't you get him to answer my plea? Won't you please help me? Please do something for me." She was crying out after them. And apparently this must have been happening for some time now. Now, verse 23 doesn't tell us exactly how long she was asking them, but it must have been long enough, because it says that it had caused frustration to them, right? She was becoming an annoyance to them in some ways. She was constantly crying out after the disciples. And so they had reached this point, the disciples, of begging Jesus, "Please, won't you just send her away?" Now, they were probably saying there, "Just do what she's asking and then she'll go away," right? Give in to her and then we can have the peace and quiet that we drew away here for, right? Give in to what she's asking for and then we will be all right. We can just have our moment of silence. And yet, despite all of that, she does not stop crying out. And already this shows us something about the woman's view of Jesus. You see, despite the disciples seeing a woman who who would not stop asking the same thing over and over again. This woman saw someone who was worth asking again and again. She was willing to keep asking, keep asking, keep asking. And so she had many reasons to quit. The disciples wanted her gone. Jesus, verse 22, it says that he did not answer her a word. She's not getting an answer. She had to go and find Jesus, seek him out. She has every reason to quit, and she does not quit. She boldly persists. Why? Because she believed that if she could just draw near to Jesus, draw near to the Master, there was hope. And then in verse 24, we get Jesus' first words. After all this, we get his first words. And after all the commotion, this is what we read. He answered his disciples, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." Now, as we read this, these words, I think it's very important for us to note that Jesus did not send her away. I think we first need to get that clear. Jesus did not send her away. The disciples beg him to do it. They're pleading with him, "Please send her away." And he does not give in. He doesn't oblige their request. Instead, we actually see Jesus give her an opportunity to keep drawing near. Now, he could have ended the conversation right there, right? He could have said, "No, go away. I'm not going to do it." Or he could have done exactly what she wanted, and then she would have left, right? That's all she was wanting. She was just wanting him to answer her request, and he doesn't do it. He gives her this opportunity to keep drawing near. And honestly, I think it would be easier in the story if he just answered her request, because it would just be another great story of Jesus giving this woman this miracle, and then we could move on. But instead of just answering her request, we get this slightly cryptic response. A slightly cryptic response to his disciples. And while it may be hard to understand, I think it actually proves his desire to engage with the woman rather than just wanting to send her away. So instead of slamming the door in her face, Jesus creates this opportunity for her to keep knocking. But with that said, I think we need to ask the question now. Well, what did he mean when he said, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel"? And to answer this, we first need to ask the question, well, who are the lost sheep of the house of Israel? And to answer that question, I think we need to look at Isaiah 49, 5 through 6. Just quickly, I want to look at Isaiah 49, verses 5 through 6. "And now the Lord says, 'He who formed me from the womb to be his servant, to bring Jacob back to him, and that Israel might be gathered to him, for I am honored in the eyes of the Lord, and my God has become my strength.' He says," God says, "'It is too light a thing that you should be my servant to raise up the tribes of Jacob and to bring back the preserved of Israel. I will make you as a light for the nations, that my salvation may reach to the end of the earth.'" Now you see, from the beginning here, what Isaiah is laying out is that God's plan was never limited to just Israel. It was not just about Israel. Israel was chosen by God, not just so that they could be the sole inheritors of his grace and his glory, but so that they could be the tool that through them all nations could be helped, all nations could be saved, that the blessing was going through him. And this goes all the way back to God's promise to Abraham, right? The very first covenant God makes with Abraham. It's the third promise there. All nations will be blessed through you. It even goes back to the garden with Adam and Eve. All nations will be blessed. All nations will be saved. All people will be saved. And this is what Isaiah 49 is anticipating. God tells his servant, it is too light a thing. And he's saying, it's not enough that you just you should be my servant to raise up the tribes of Israel. He says, I will make you as a light for all the nations, that my salvation may reach to the end of the earth. God is saying that his glory is so great, so magnificent, so wonderful, that Israel alone cannot appreciate it. Israel alone is not enough for God. He says it is too light a thing. He wants to save the world, everybody. It is too light a thing. And that means, when we read Jesus' words here, when we read him say, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel," he cannot mean that God's grace, God's mercies, God's blessings only end with Israel. See, Isaiah had already made that very clear. It was not just about Israel. God's salvation did not end with Israel, but it was destined for all the nations. But then, if Israel was not the only point of Jesus' statement, it is not the entire point of Jesus' statement in salvation, well, then what is? Well, I want you to notice in Jesus' words here, he does not simply say that he came for Israel. Right? If you wanted to say, well, I'm only here for Israel, he could have said that. I was only sent to the house of Israel, but he doesn't. He says he came for the lost sheep of Israel, the lost sheep. And that distinction matters. Because if Jesus' concern was merely ethnic or national, there would be no need for that word lost. He wouldn't need to specify who he was coming for. And with our understanding of Isaiah 49, we know that God's purpose was never limited to Israel. It was through Israel God's salvation would reach everyone. Through Israel, all nations would be saved. And so when Jesus speaks to the lost sheep of Israel, our attention should not primarily be drawn to the house of Israel, but rather to the lost sheep. He's saying, I was sent only to the lost sheep. And now, I think it's important to note one more thing before we see what this means, because as we read this, Jesus does not say this in response to the woman. He still has not spoken to the Canaanite woman yet. Notice, he says this in response to his disciples. He says, his disciples, they sent her away, and then he says, I was sent only to the lost sheep. I'm only seeking the lost. But how do those things connect? How does that response correlate with that? Well, I think Jesus was talking about lost sheep to remind his disciples of his true purpose and his true mission. When the disciples ask him to just send her away, to do the one thing that would make her leave, he reminds them of why he was sent to earth in the first place. They say, just cast out her demons and then she'll go away. She'll leave us alone. But Jesus says, I did not merely come to cast out demons. I did not just come to heal people and send them away. He said, I came to reunite sheep with their shepherd. I came to seek and save the lost. And so Jesus, he refuses to reduce his mission here to just solving inconveniences, solving people's temporary problems. His purpose is and was so much greater than that. He came to seek and save the lost. That is the whole point of his statement here. That is why he says, I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. He's telling them, I'm doing so much more than you even realize. And so he was not describing a nation with these words. He was describing a people in need of a shepherd. People who know that they need guidance, right? People who know that they cannot do it on their own. People who know that they cannot find their own way. People who know that they need saving. And for a moment, when we consider what that kind of person looks like, I don't think we have to look any further than the woman that's standing right in front of Jesus. Right? Think about what we've already seen from this woman. She knows she needs help, and so she finds Jesus. She knows that she cannot solve her problem herself. She's traveled far to find him. She is seeking him despite every obstacle in her path. The disciples want her gone. She's not getting the answer, and yet she keeps seeking the shepherd because she knows she needs help. Why? Because she knows that apart from the shepherd, she has nowhere else to go. And so in many ways, I think this woman is already proving and acting exactly like a lost sheep in search of a shepherd. Meaning while the disciples saw a problem that they wanted to remove, Jesus saw a lost sheep he had come to save. I think that's kind of the heart of everything he's saying there. I'm here for sheep. I'm not just here to heal people and send them away. I'm here to save lost souls. And so in verse 24, Jesus' words here are not just about, they're not about the exclusivity of salvation, but rather they are about an opportunity for sheep to approach her shepherd. And verse 25 continues to show the faith of the Canaanite woman. Verse 25, notice here, she said, this is what she did. But she came and knelt before him, saying, Lord, help me. Lord, help me. And this is where we really begin to see the faith of the woman take action, right? In full action. I think it's important to note here that faith is not only measured by what we affirm about Jesus, but it's by how much we do to draw near him. It's not merely about saying, yes, I know you can do this, I know you're this, but it's how far we're willing to go. You see, The bold faith, the persistent refusal to turn away from Christ, even when silence or circumstances or opposition or anything else gets in our way, faith says, I'm going to keep seeking Jesus. And in this woman's coming to Jesus, we are not merely watching persistence, but we are watching her faith take shape in real place. We are seeing this faith take action. And yet, despite this boldness of faith, despite this great faith we've already seen, What is Jesus' response? Jesus now, in verse 26, he turns to her and he talks to her, but he doesn't say what we would, I think, assume he'd say, right? He doesn't instantly go, oh, great woman here, I'll bless you now, great faith. No, verse 26, he kind of takes us in a shocking direction, right? But it forces us to slow down and really consider what's happening here. So we're going to take some time on verse 26. Matthew 15, verse 26. And he answered, it is not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. And this is typically the point of the story where it gets a little uncomfortable, right? The words feel weighty. This is a heavy statement. What does it mean? What is going on here? Why is Jesus doing this? But I think in understanding this, it helps to recognize the form of his teaching. Why Jesus is teaching this way and how he is teaching. And I think it actually correlates to many of Jesus's parables. And it helps us a lot to view this as a parable. See, typically when Jesus taught, he would take a very common story or lesson that we all know from daily lives, right? From all of our lives, and he would apply that to a spiritual fact. And he tried to push us deeper in that way. So he takes something common in our daily lives and apply it to something spiritually deep. And here, that image, that just daily image, if we separate everything else and we just look at this as a story, we all can relate to this story, right? The image is very simple. He just says, a table is set, children are being fed, bread is present, and it is given with intention and care. The bread is not random or wasted. It is not thrown aside without thought or scattered indiscriminately. It is prepared and it is given. And it is meant for those it is intended for. And so what he's saying here is simply there is nothing careless in what the master provides. So the point of the story is there is nothing careless about what is being given from the master's table. It's not being thrown aside. And we can all relate to this. Think for a moment about Thanksgiving. All right, Thanksgiving. How many of us would gather our families together for Thanksgiving? We'd spend all this money and time to travel together, and then we put all this time and effort into this great grand meal to show how much we love and appreciate our families. We would get everybody together, put hours and hours into making this great turkey, this grand feast, and then right before serving the turkey, take it into the backyard and just throw it out. Nobody would do that. Well, we wouldn't do that. There's no point in doing that. And so not only would it just be wasteful, but it would show a disregard for the meal itself. It would show that there was no care or thought in what the master or what was being given to everybody. So this is the picture Jesus gives. It's not a rejection. He's not rejecting this woman. He's simply showing her the design of his plan, that the purpose behind everything, there is meaning behind everything he gives. It's a provision that is purposeful rather than careless. A household where what is given has meaning. And in doing so, Jesus is actually giving this woman a chance to show how much she values what's at the table. How much does she truly value what Jesus is giving? Because the issue wasn't just that she was hungry, right? Plenty of people came to Jesus saying that they needed something from him, saying that they needed help, they needed healing, they needed something from him. The deeper question that was here, that Jesus was pushing, was whether or not she merely wanted the gift or if she wanted the giver. Could she recognize that the value of the giver, the value of the master, whether she was simply seeking food or whether she knew she needed a shepherd? And I think this is really the crux of the whole story. Jesus is allowing her to prove if she is a dog in search of a meal, just a quick meal so she can then be gone, or if she is a sheep that knows she needs a shepherd. That's everything Jesus is saying in one sentence. Is she in search of a shepherd? And I think this is precisely where Jesus pushes the conversation deeper. Because if the bread at the master's table is given with purpose, then it cannot be approached as if it is deserved. Right? We cannot think that it is owed us. We cannot think that we can demand it as a right. But this struggle is a struggle that reaches far beyond just this woman. It is a struggle of the human heart. We often approach God with the assumption that his grace should be expected, that his blessings are a guarantee to us, that his mercy can be treated as something we are entitled to receiving. Yet bread from the master's table, this whole image, bread from the master's table is never received rightly when it is assumed. It is only received rightly when it is received as a great gift, as a beautiful gift given to us from Jesus. So Jesus, in these words, is not shutting the door on the woman. He is not sending her away. He is simply clarifying the nature of what it is that she's asking for. He is revealing that what is at the table is not something to be carelessly grasped at, but rather a tender gift to be received. And that leads us to the real question that this moment puts on us. Because it is not simply whether there is enough at the table, whether the blessings are great enough for us. It is about the posture we take when we come to Him. Because what matters here is not proximity to the table, but rather dependence on the one who provides. The issue is not about whether or not we can get near to Jesus. The issue is how we stand before Him when we do. We can get near to Christ. He is seeking to have a relationship for Him. But when we get to Him, will we stand with a posture that says, I deserve to be here? Or a posture that says, you are great. And now with this understanding, let's look at how this woman responds to Jesus. Verse 27. And she said, yes, Lord. Yes, Lord. Yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the master's table. Here she does not argue with Jesus. Right? She does not protest. She does not demand. She doesn't start listing out reasons why she really needs help. She could have said, I desperately need your help. Why are you making this so hard? Why can't I just have what I've asked for? Instead, she accepts the picture that Jesus draws, and she responds from within it. She says, yes, Lord. And I think those words are probably the most important in this whole passage. Yes, Lord. She agrees with him. She understands his teaching. But rather than resisting the picture, she embraces it and continues to draw near the Lord because she is not focused on herself. She's not focused on her. She's focused on how valuable the master is. She is not looking at what she lacks, looking at what she doesn't have. She's looking at what Jesus possesses. She believes something remarkable. She believes that what Jesus has to offer is so abundant, it's so powerful, it is so valuable that even the crumbs are enough. Even the little crumbs of what he is giving is enough to change her life. I want us to think about that for a moment. What kind of faith says, I don't need the whole loaf. I don't need all of your blessings. I don't need everything you're offering. Every single blessing I could possibly have. Even the crumbs are enough. Even the crumbs are enough for me. That, I think, is just humility. It's humble faith. The woman understands something that I think many of us struggle to learn. The power was never in her position at the table. The power was in the one sitting at the head of it. And that changes everything because humility is not thinking less of Christ's blessings, right? And it's not thinking we are in the wrong place before God, right? If we just had a better place before God, then we could have more blessings. Then we could have truly what we're seeking for. Humility is recognizing how much greater Christ's blessings are than we deserve. How much greater God is than we deserve. The woman understood that she was not entitled to anything. And yet she also understood that Jesus is so merciful, so powerful, so good, that even what falls from his table is enough to change her life. And that's the difference between pride and humility, right? Pride looks at what is deserved, and humility looks at Christ and says, whatever comes from your hand is enough. Anything Christ offers is more than enough for us. And I think this is exactly why Christ responds in the way that he does in verse 28. Jesus responds to her, O woman, great is your faith. Great is your faith. You see, it wasn't just her relentless persistence. It wasn't just that she believed Jesus could heal her daughter, although those things are true and those things are shows of faith. Jesus says, great is your faith, because the woman possessed two qualities that I think rarely stay together but are so important to faith. The woman had the boldness to approach, yet the humility to be satisfied by whatever God gave her. It is far too easy for us to lose one or the other, right? To have boldness but forget the humility, or to have the humility but to forget boldness. But faith, true faith, is this beautiful blend of both. And sometimes, for us, for example, we have the humility, but we lose the boldness. We can convince ourselves that we should never approach God, right? That he doesn't want to hear us, that we're not good enough for God to answer our prayers, that God doesn't want to hear little old me. And so we never approach him. We never draw near to him. We don't cry out after him. We don't ask him for what is at his table. And other times we do the opposite. We can have the boldness, but no humility. We can approach God as though we are owed, as though we deserve his blessings, as though what is at his table should be mine. I've earned this. We can become so entitled in the seats that God has given us that we no longer marvel at the very fact that we were invited to the table in the first place. This is a great blessing that we even get to have the ability to go before him. But this woman, she holds both humility and boldness together. She refuses to stop approaching Christ, and she refuses to stop honoring Christ. She keeps coming, and she keeps humbling herself. And that is great faith. Great faith is not measured by how loudly we pray, right? It's not measured by how loud we are before everybody. Great faith is not measured by how confident we feel either, about how confident we feel in our faith. Great faith is measured by whether we will continue approaching the Master while remembering who we are and who he is. Faith is the boldness to approach the Master's table and the humility to be satisfied by whatever he gives us. So with this, let me ask us, do we struggle with the boldness of faith? Because this woman faced obstacle after obstacle, right? Remember what this woman has gone through. Jesus was far from where he normally was. He was seeking out privacy. His disciples wanted him gone, wanted her gone. They were openly saying, send her away. Get her out of here. Jesus was not responding to her. And yet she kept coming. She kept asking. She kept crying out after her. And so for us, if we were that woman, at what point do you think we would stop asking? At what point would we turn and say, that's enough. I've tried my hardest. It's time to give up. I'm no longer asking God. Clearly it's not coming today. How far would we be willing to go? How quickly do we quit in our daily lives? How quickly do we stop praying? How quickly do we decide that because we haven't heard the answer yet, it must not be coming at all? How quickly do we allow hardship, disappointment, a season of waiting to just convince us to stop praying altogether, to stop approaching Christ? This woman's faith reminds us that true faith keeps coming. It keeps approaching. It keeps going. Faith keeps knocking. It keeps seeking. Not because it is entitled to an answer, but because it knows where hope is found, where true hope is found. And faith requires a whole lot of confidence. It requires that boldness. Not self-confidence, not boldness in myself, but confidence that no matter what happens, so long as we are approaching God, we're heading in the right direction. As long as we're drawing near to Christ, we are going where we need to be. That is bold faith. Confidence in Christ. But possibly the greater challenge with this is the humility. It's the humble aspect. Because if we're being honest, I think that's where we start to become uncomfortable with the story. It's where the discomfort starts to set in. We read this passage and immediately begin asking questions. Why doesn't Jesus heal her? He has the ability to. Why does he just do what she asks right away? Why does he wait for so long? And perhaps the reason this story bothers us isn't just because Jesus mentions dogs. It's not about the dogs. Perhaps it is because we instinctively assume that we are the children. Our first thought is, well, of course I'm the child. Of course I'm the one at the table who is getting the bread. We enter the story expecting to identify with the children. We assume that the blessings already belong to us. We assume that the bread is ours. But the woman, she never makes that assumption. She doesn't assume that it's already deserved, it's already owed her. She comes with no claim, no entitlement, no indignation. She simply asks for mercy. Mercy. And that is why her faith is called great. She understands something that is so easy to forget. Before God, our greatest need is not a seat at the table. It is the kindness of the Master. It is the kindness of God that we need above all else. The kindness of God. And when we struggle with this text, what exactly is making us uncomfortable? In questioning this passage, we may accidentally reveal something about ourselves. Perhaps we have forgotten what grace is. Grace is undeserved. It is not owed. It is not due us. This woman did not forget what grace is. She never claimed to deserve anything. She never argued with Jesus. She never appealed to her own goodness. Instead, she simply appealed to the goodness of God. And there is a huge difference in those two things, appealing to my goodness and God's goodness. You see, one says, look at what I deserve, and the other says, look at who you are. Look at how great you are. For us, which one sounds more like our prayers? When God blesses us, for example, are we grateful above all else? Or do we quietly assume that that answered prayer was due us, that we got exactly what we've earned? When we pray to God and He answers our prayers, do we rejoice greatly for a long, long time? Or do we instantly move on to, okay, time to answer this next prayer. Time to get on the next thing off the list, crossed off. How much do our prayers reflect this, the words of the woman? Yes, Lord. Yes, Lord, but even the crumbs are enough. Even the crumbs. Have we grown so comfortable at the Master's table that we no longer recognize the value of what's on it? Because in the end, I think it is the overvalue of self that keeps us from properly valuing God. When we begin to think highly of what we deserve, we inevitably begin to think lightly of what God has already given us. But the Canaanite woman understood something different. She did not approach Jesus believing she deserved a blessing. She approached Jesus because she knew He possessed one. She was not focused on her own worthiness, but she was focused on His great mercy. And ultimately, I think this is what this story is about. The woman valued what Jesus had. She valued it so much that she crossed every barrier to get to Him. She was willing to endure perseverance, to endure the disciples telling her to leave, to endure silence, to endure anything. She valued it so much that she was willing to settle even for the crumbs. And that, I think right here, is where the irony of the story kind of reaches its climax. Because while the woman believed that even the crumbs were enough for her, I want us to notice that Jesus did not leave her with just crumbs. Verse 28 says that He healed her daughter instantly. Right away, she's healed. And you see the beauty of that? Jesus never intended to leave her under the table. He was simply revealing the kind of faith that it takes to belong at it. That the lesson is not that Jesus only gives crumbs. I don't want that to be the takeaway. It's not that only crumbs are available to us. The lesson is that those who understand they deserve less than crumbs are often the ones who discover just how abundant Jesus' mercy truly is. When we value the Master, we will do anything to draw near His table. We will keep approaching no matter the obstacle. We will realize that even the smallest blessings from His hand, they are more than we deserve. Because the value in the story was never in the bread or in the crumbs. The value in our lives is not just in the bread or the crumbs. The value sits at the head of the table. The value is in the Master. Let's go to God in prayer.